This is the Tax Update Podcast for May the 4th, 2009. This week, Net Operating Loss Guidance. Let's try this one again. The Tax Update Podcast is intended for tax professionals and is not designed for those not skilled in independent tax research. All readers and listeners are expected to do their own research and determine its raised in this presentation before relying upon the positions presented. The podcast and its document may be reproduced freely as long as no fee is charged for the use of the document or the audio file. Such prohibited use includes using the podcast or document as part of a CP presentation for which a fee is charged. The podcast is sponsored by Limeburg Information Services, located on the web at www.limeburgservices.com. Limeburg Information Services offers email newsletters on tax-related matters, as well as access to a library of useful information to tax practitioners that subscribe to their services. Visit them on the web at www.limeburgservices.com. The IRS has issued a revised ruling to deal with the new Section 172B1H that Congress added in February to allow certain small businesses to elect from four different years to begin using qualified net operating loss carrybacks. This is the IRS's second try at giving us some guidance in this area, and it amounts to a simplified election reflecting the fact that many taxpayers were simply not following the requirements in the prior notice, and we're using effectively the Nike slogan of let's just do it to handle the new rules. This ruling also gives some examples that are slightly revised of the application of these rules to past rentees and their owners. The ruling in question is Revenue Ruling 2009-26, and it was issued April the 24th, 2009. Back in February, we previously discussed the new net operating loss provisions that Congress added shortly after the new law was passed into law. The new law added Section 172B1H, which essentially read as follows. It summarized first starting with the fact if you have an eligible small business, you can elect to carry back the NOL in addition to the standard 2 years, a number which is, quote, not more than two but less than six, meaning translated 3, 4, or 5 years, essentially instead of the two-year period. The applicable net operating loss is limited to 2008, your 2008 tax year, though again, if you were a qualified business at a fiscal year, you had a choice of whether it was a year that began and a year that ended in 2008. There we were told the election when we got to Section 172B1H3III, that the election would be made in the form and method prescribed by the Secretary, but it must be made by the due date of the return, including extensions to file. So there is an absolute deadline for when you must decide which one of the net operating loss methods you're going to use. And finally, it defined an eligible small business by using a $15 million cap. Now, these are discussed in far more detail in the older podcast, which you could still refer to. That podcast came out right after the law, but before the IRS's first set of guidance. We're now going to walk through the second set of guidance. That first set of guidance was issued about a month later, and it told taxpayers who had not already filed their return how to handle the election. The law had a provision that would deal with returns already filed. We'll talk about that later. But in the original ruling, which was Revenue Procedure 2009-19, the IRS told us that essentially in Section 4, if we had not filed a return, we were supposed to, on the return, attach a statement to the tax return for the year in which the NOL arises, clearly state we were electing under Section 172B1H an alternative carryback period, describe the years we were electing, 3, 4, or 5 years, and if applicable, state that we were electing to apply it to your year that begins in 2008 as opposed to the ones that ended in 2008. And that return had to be filed by the due date, including extensions of time for filing the return for the applicable 2008 NOL. It did note that in a late election, you could have relief under Regulation 301.9100-2B. We've talked about that particular one. If you go back a couple of years, the discussion about late election relief potential usefulness there. And we were also reminded that we had until April 17, 2009, to effectively fix any NOLs we'd done before. That April 17, 2009 date, which has already passed, was essentially fixed by statute. Congress granted us until then to fix old elections. Now, the theory of that method was simple. They gave us in this ruling that we would just attach an election to the filed return for the year in question. Unfortunately, since this ruling came down on March 16th, more than a few preparers probably didn't drop everything and go read this ruling to determine how to handle the 3-, 4-, or 5-year carryback. Rather, they just started doing 3-, 4-, or 5-year carrybacks. The IRS noted that it's been receiving such filings that didn't comply with the formal election procedures, and the IRS even does attribute that to the fact that the ruling came out on March 16th, and maybe nobody was paying much attention to IRS rulings right at that date. The new revenue procedure that we have now keeps the old election option as one approach, so you still can attach your election to the timely filed or the regular tax return. However, it adds a simpler option of simply, within a relevant time period, filing a carryback for the proper period. That means you can do it on a Form 1045 for an individual, 1139 for a corporation, or an amended return. Note that for most taxpayers that are individuals, the extended due date would be October the 15th for individual taxpayers. And that's going to be earlier than the date on which normally you would be able to file a 1045 and claim, make a claim for refund. That just needs to be filed by the end of the year following the year in which the loss occurred. So generally for an individual taxpayer, by December 31st, 2009. However, if you want to make the shortcut election, you need to make sure your 1045 is in by October 15th, 2009. The new ruling repeats, in somewhat shortened form, the method given in the original ruling 2009-19, as we mentioned. Again, we find this in Section 4, this time of the revised ruling. And it tells us that, in general, we may make the election under Section 172B1H by attaching a statement to the timely filed federal income tax return for the year in which the applicable NOL arises. Again, it must state we're electing to apply Section 172B1H, specify the length of the period we're electing, and if it ended before February 17, 2009, we filed a return before that date, we must make the election on or before the due date of the return or April 17th. Now, the IRS, as we said, noted that some taxpayers were taking shortcuts. The ruling makes a mention of that in Section 1 of the ruling in Paragraph 2, where it said the service has received many claims from taxpayers to seek a 3-, 4-, or 5-year carryback, but that inadvertently have not made a valid election according to Revenue Procedure 2009-19. The service goes on to tell us these inadvertent failures may be due to the fact the enactment of Section 1211 and the issuance of Revenue Proc 2009-19 occurred midway through the current tax filing season. The reference to Section 1211 there is not a reference to the Code Section 1211, but rather to the Act Section 1211, so don't get confused by that reference. The IRS decided that, in fact, maybe the best approach for them would be to simply go with the flow and make what taxpayers were actually doing a valid method for making the election, and that's what they did. The IRS goes on to note in Paragraph 3 of Section 1 that to provide certainty to taxpayers and implement the intent of Congress in providing an extended carryback period, this revenue procedure modifies Revenue Procedure 2009-19 to provide that an ESB, which stands for Eligible Small Business, remember we have to be that, that's the $15 million test, and make a 3-, 4-, or 5-year carryback period by simply filing a Form 1045, Form 1139, or amended return that carries back the NOL for 3, 4, or 5 years. It goes on to warn us, though, that although the Forms 1045 and 1139 are usually due within 12 months after the taxable year of the NOL, Section 172B1H3 requires a taxpayer elect a 3-, 4-, or 5-year carryback within 6 months of the due date, excluding extensions of the return for the taxable year of the NOL. Thus, a taxpayer that seeks to make a timely Section 172B1H election using Form 1035, 1139, or amended return must file the form in advance of its ordinary due date. The explanation, as we said, contains a key caution, and we need to be aware of that. The do-it-yourself approach has to deal with the statutory limitation on when this election has to be made. So even though an application for tentative refund can be filed after the extended due date for the return in question and still be timely, if you want to make a shortcut election, you're going to have to make sure that gets filed by, generally, October 15th for an individual. The special rules for the shortcut election are spelled out as Section 4 continues by telling us to elect on what they call an appropriate form. And it says a taxpayer that did not make an election under Section 172B1H using the first procedures we described and did not elect to go forego the carryback period under Section 172B3. Remember, we always have the option to forego it and carry our losses forward. You can make the election under Section 172B1H by as follows, it notes, and it may make the election by filing the appropriate form, applying the NOL carryback period to the period chosen by the taxpayer. It notes that no statement or label is required with the appropriate form. Again, the Nike approach, you just do it. The appropriate form is for corporations, Form 1139, Corporation Application for Refund, or Form 1120X, the amended U.S. corporate return. For individuals, you file Form 1045 or Form 1040X. And for estates or trusts, you also file Form 1045 or an amended Form 1041. A taxpayer that makes the election under Section 172B1H by filing an amended return must file its return for the earliest taxable year to which you are carrying back the NOL. The notice goes on to tell us, and if you see the printed version of my materials here, you're going to see I put emphasis on this, you should not file an amended return for the applicable NOL taxable year. So if you have already filed the 2008 return for the individual that generated the NOL, you do not now, if you file the 1045, go back and file an amended 2008 form. Rather, you simply file your 1045 for the individual going back 3, 4, or 5 years. The procedure goes on to note that that appropriate form has to be filed on or before the later of the date that is 6 months after the due date for filing the return for the year of the applicable NOL, or April 17th, 2009. That April 17th was the get-out-of-jail-free date for returns that had already been filed and could have had an applicable NOL. On additional rules, it says you make an election by filing an appropriate form that amends a prior refund claim. The amendments will also apply to the carryback of any alternative tax NOL for the same year. In the case of an amended application for a tentative carryback adjustment, the 90-day period described in Section 6411B will begin on the date the amended application is filed. So if you make a change to a previously filed carryback, you're going to restart the 90-day period. It also makes clear that the alternative tax NOL for AMT purposes, you can't take it back to one period for AMT purposes and another period for regular tax. Now, due to that special due date problem, as we start approaching the October 15th date for our individuals that like to procrastinate, we may want to go ahead and make sure we make the election on the 1040 itself. In fact, that's probably not a bad idea anyway if a client accidentally forgets to or doesn't get around to filing their 1045 carryback form. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they forget to do things. You know, oh, I misplaced that. We probably should make the election on the original return. But it is nice to know that if we, in fact, did not include an election with the original 1040, we now can go back on the 1045. We don't need to file a 1040X. However, we do need to make sure that we get that 1045 or, as appropriate, the 1139 in before the 6 month period runs. The ruling deals with one other issue and discusses how pass-through entities are impacted and basically just makes a minor change to what the examples that were given before, but we'll discuss the pass-through entities here using this ruling, because we get to describe how we apply these procedures. And the new ruling notes in Section 4, Paragraph 3, that it deals with partnership, S corporations, and sole proprietorship. First, it deals with a partner. If the taxpayer is a partner in a partnership that qualifies as an ESB, and note here that the test for what's an ESB is applied at the partnership, not the partner level, the taxpayer may make the Section 172B1H election. So although we determine an eligible small business at the partnership level, the election for a number of years to carry back is made by the partner, not the partnership. So that is where the election is made, and we can take the income gain loss and deduction allocable under 704 and allowed in calculating the taxpayer's applicable 2008 NOL, because we may have other sources. We may have an eligible small business as a proprietorship. Similarly, the second paragraph here in paragraph 3 tells us that if we have an S corporation, again, we test for the S corporation ESB status at the corporate level, but the election for the number of years to carry back is made by each shareholder. So if you have 5 shareholders, they each could make different elections. They don't have to all be consistent going back, say, 5 years. One shareholder could go back 5 years, another could go back 4, and everybody else might go back to or might even elect to carry it forward. If the taxpayer is an owner of a sole proprietorship, well, obviously we apply the ESB test at the proprietorship level and the elections at the individual. We go on to tell in paragraph 4, remind us, though, that in determining if it's an ESB, we do have to aggregate rules under, we do have aggregation rules under section 448C2 that determine whether they meet the test of section 448C. So we do have to aggregate in that case. Now, the IRS gives us two examples of how to deal with the aggregation rules. In example 1, we have partnerships A, B, and C have average gross receipts of $10 million, $12 million, and $14 million, respectively. If we had to aggregate those, that clearly is going to go over the $15 million limitation. Partner T owns a 40% interest in each partnership. So he has a 40% interest in each one of the three partnerships. Subject to the limitations in paragraph 4.035 of the procedure, he can apply the election to the portion of the applicable NOL because each of the partnerships is an eligible small business. So he can apply that. He's going to make one election for his total eligible small business carryback, but he can make the election. He's not going to be prohibited simply because the three partnerships taken as a whole have more than $15 million in overall average collect receipts. However, in example 2, they modify the facts to change this under common control within the meanings of section 52B1. That's one of the triggering events that causes us to have to aggregate under section 448C2. In that case, if the three partnerships are aggregated because we get common control as required by that provision, then we have to apply those rules. We're not going to have an eligible small business. None of those would be eligible. Now, any other portion NOL from those for these partnerships is fine. Now, in this example, I should say changing that. A and B are the two that are common control. C's not. So we cannot carry back A and B's loss, but we can carry back C's. Now, if we have multiple losses, then we're told how we can deal with the maximum loss we can carry back for an individual. In the case of a holder of an interest in an ESB-eligible entity, being a partnership, S-corporation, or proprietorship, our carryback is limited to the lesser of our share of income, gain, loss, or deduction allowed in computing the NOL that came from the partnerships, S-corporations, or proprietorships that qualify as ESB, or our regular NOL we would qualify for carrying back for that year in question. Now, that computation makes sense. We obviously can't carry back a net loss that is greater than the loss we could have carried back otherwise. But as well, if we have losses, let's say that we have our own proprietorship that's had over $15 million of revenue. It had a loss this year, but then we have these partnerships that are electing eligible small businesses. We can only carry back from the pass-throughs, not from our proprietorship in making this call. One other nice fact, the ruling is effectively retroactive in effect. So if you were one of the taxpayers or you represent a taxpayer who managed to just do the Nike bit for after the law passed in February, you don't have to go back and do anything. If you filed a 1045 that went back 5 years, you've essentially complied with the election requirements of this ruling. Now, the provision gives us that was in the bill gives us an amazing level of flexibility in determining when to carry a loss back to and to find the most advantageous year. But you need to be very aware of the deadlines you are facing, especially that 6-month deadline out as we get on extension returns. The new ruling gives a shortcut option, but that shortcut option introduces a danger since some of our clients may be aware that usually the idea has been to file the regular return, give the IRS a little time to process it, then throw in your quick carryback claim. In this case, if they do that and delay filing that till after October 15th, they may be too late to make the election. Now, those of us in Arizona have another little problem and issue to deal with. It appears at this point highly unlikely the Arizona legislature is going to give us conformity on this matter. And that impacts individuals. Corporations have never been allowed to carry back the losses. For Arizona individuals, you'll have to weigh the cost of carrying back 3, 4, or 5 years with the fact that we will now have a discrepancy between federal and Arizona. We're going to have to do different carryback periods for the two types of taxes. That may or may not cause significant complications depending upon whether under the recalculated Arizona numbers, now with a 2-year carryback, you might have a carry forward, while for the Fed you won't. We also have to deal with the fact the legislature is still being in session. you may find that they're going to prescribe a method for handling this that may or may not be what we think it would be at this point with the simple nonconformity. There may be some other way of handling this they're going to tell us about. That'll be something we'll have to deal with. Those of you in other states, if the state has traditionally allowed carryback provisions, then you have to deal with your own issue of whether or not you're going to be allowed to carry back this particular loss and have conformity. So we'll have to keep our eyes on the state issues. For those of you in states that don't allow carrybacks, which appears to be the majority, well, this isn't really a problem for you. Now, this has been the Tax Update Podcast for May the 4th, 2009, discussing this net operating loss ruling the IRS gave us. The Tax Update Podcast, as always, is brought to you by Limeburg Information Services, located on the web at www.limeburgservices.com. Be sure to take a look over there and consider subscribing to their information and their newsletters that give us updates on tax-related matters. This has been the Tax Update Podcast.